Now, me being who I am, again, a little too quick with words, I sat there, smiled. After I thought about it, I said, well, sir, if we make it back to the top, that means that the route was clear and I'm good to go. Otherwise, you get blown up. Either way, I'm good to go. So, of course, that didn't help the situation, right? Hell State, we are back. Welcome to Building Wealth with Wheeler. Glad you guys are back. I'm excited about the day. Today we're going to talk about how you can take control of your career. For every one of you who've been beat down by your boss, feel like life busts you in the face every morning where you're like, oh, Lord, it's morning versus good morning, Lord. Here we go. We're going to talk about how you can take charge of your career. And not only that, but as always, in doing so, what are we doing? We're going to build our wealth. So let's dive in. Okay, but before I dive in, as I like to do, because I've been getting a lot of questions lately, and I don't want to just turn this into the me show, but it kind of is. I want to kind of answer some questions. So here's one I get a lot lately is hedge fund. You know, it's always funny. I always get asked questions about all of these, non-normal, investment. And again, people are looking for that silver bullet. But let's talk about hedge funds. Even for you, those of you who are in the know, and even for those of you who are in hedge funds, I'm not going to get into all the details of a hedge fund, but they probably are not doing what you think they are to do. They are, in essence, a hedge. That's why they're called hedge funds. Well, what's a hedge? That means it's a counter to I got my main investments over here, whatever that is I'm doing, real estate, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, whatever that is that I'm doing over here, that's my main engine driving. That's the chugga-chugga-choo-choo. And then just for whatever reason that something happens, a market correction or an episode in business that causes this main thing to derail a little bit, then that's where my hedge fund kicks in. So it's not an all or other, right? That's where people ran into problems, the whole Bernie Madoff thing and his hedge fund, right? All of these rich people. And oh, by the way, rich people, just because you're rich don't mean you're smart. Sorry, it's just not the truth. You're smart at whatever it is that made you rich. But just know that, right? So going back to hedge funds are meant to be a counter for your main investments. Here's another fun fact. Hedge funds, on the whole, do not capture all of the upside that they could, and they capture and they experience, rather, more downside than other normal investments. What does that mean? Well, let me break it down for you. That means that if this hedge fund was operating in a normal investment atmosphere, for layman's terms, you would get more in your normal investments than you would in a hedge fund. That means that if your hedge fund is earning 7%, normal environment, normal investments, it would be earning 10, you're only getting 7. You're not going to get as much upside, as much reward, as much win in a hedge fund as you think you are, which is sad, right? Because most people think, oh, that's what a hedge fund is. I'm in the know. I meet the minimum to get into this hedge fund that you're not in. I'm special. I'm Dallas. I'm $30,000 millionaire, but I'm in a hedge fund. I have no idea what it is. I can't get my money out. There's liquidity issues. Charge me fees. I don't really understand. And oh, by the way, when the market corrects, I experience more of a loss than my peers do. Now, again, hedge funds are not a bad thing. They are a hedge. They're a part, like I say, they're like cereal, part of an overall healthy breakfast. If you eat cereal for breakfast every morning, I'm sorry, you're going to get fat. That's it, right? You eat Crunch and Munch all day, you're going to get fat. So if you just invest in hedge funds, it's probably not going to work out for you. So that's what a hedge fund is. For most of you, for the majority of people, they don't make sense. I would say if you want to put a number to it, when you start to have $5 million and above, then maybe hedge funds start to make sense for you. Of course, there's certain disclaimers and disclosures with all of that. But for the purposes of the masses out there, most of the people who are asking about hedge funds don't need hedge funds, okay? And for those of you who do have hedge funds, I would encourage you to dive down into the nitty-gritty and understand your liquidity, meaning when can I get in and when can I get out, and what are my fees, and exactly how does this hedge against my other investments? If you don't know those answers, why are you in a hedge fund, okay? You're with Bernie Madoff, right? Don't do it. Okay, here's the other question I get again. What's the best investment out there today? You know, again, in today's times, there is no silver bullet. what I would say is most people don't understand what they're invested in now or what they were invested in the past. All they understand is that they don't have as much money in their portfolio now as they did maybe 6 months ago. That's probably really most of you understand. So to answer that question for you, you got to go look and see what you were in. Why did your portfolio reduce in size? And then will it go back up? Maybe you stay with that, or where are you at in your retirement plan? Because mostly what I talk about is planning for retirement long-term wealth. So when you ask me what the best investment out there is, I would ask you, what are we using the money for? Okay, and then that will help tell you. But in general purposes, I mean, right now, I'll tell you what's hot right now, probably is people like rising dividends, companies that pay a lot in dividends that are blue chip, that type of thing. That doesn't mean I'm recommending you go out there and buy it. I'm just saying they're very popular right now, companies that have dividends and that have paid dividends over history and will probably continue to pay dividends. That's what I see out there now. But again, I'm not recommending that to anybody. I would first tell you to go see what your plan is and see if that fits. And then here's another question I get, and I'm surprised I get this, honestly. It's like, why hasn't Mississippi State ever won a national football championship? Right? Well, first of all, we did win the baseball national championship last year. Ole Miss kind of stole it this year. I'll take it. It's Mississippi. I grew up there. I root for Mississippi teams. But Mississippi State is a national champion in baseball. Now, in terms of football, with the SEC, and for you Texas fans out there, welcome to it, both A&M and UT, I guess, coming at you. It's a little known fact, and I'm surprised it's a little known. Mississippi State is known for its academics. I say this all the time. We're an academic institution, more so than a sports powerhouse. So if you want the absolute height in education and to be the best that you can be, I would and strongly encourage you to check out Mississippi State. Hell State. All right. Current events. What's going on in the tech world, and why does stuff seem to be crashing? Okay. All right. I'm not going to make this into a long story, but really, money is tightening up. When feds raise the rates, that means they're making money tight. What does that mean? That means it's not a lot of money to be out there for loans. Most of these tech companies work off of money for growth initiatives. I mean, they go out and they borrow money. They put it and they invest it in their business and then they turn it into their product and the product sells, so on and so on. Well, when the feds tighten the rates, that means there's not enough money. There's not a lot. There's not as much money to borrow. And it kind of puts the crunch on a lot of these tech firms, as it would with any growth company. So that's what you're kind of seeing. That doesn't mean they're all bad. It doesn't mean that we're going to re-experience what happened in 1999 or 2000 with a bunch of, you know, dot-coms went bust. I don't know that certain companies won't go bust this time, but it's not a repeat. For those of you who are thinking it's a repeat of 1999 or 2000, it's not a repeat. It's just a fiscal phenomenon that happens when feds tighten money. The more risky businesses or the more speculative businesses or the newer businesses or the smaller businesses tend to suffer the most first. But here's what they also tend to do. They tend to recover quickly as well. So I hope that answers that question. Here's one that kind of speaks to what we're talking about today. He says, Wheeler, I can't seem to get along with my boss. What should I do? Short answer is try again. Your boss is your boss. And if you work in a corporate world, yep, HR's out there. But listen, HR, honestly, it's a joke. If you work at HR, I'm sorry. I know you probably have great intentions for your employees, but I had a class at UNT, University of North Texas, up here that I taught, and we came to the chapter on human resources or human relations. And I said, what is the number one mission of human resources? Of course, all the hands go up, and I get the general answers, you know, helping people, doing employee benefits, helping you be the best you can be, all of the touchy-feely stuff that the HR like to put out there. All wrong, completely wrong. The number one function of HR for any company is this. It is to keep the company from being sued. That's it. Stop. Full stop. End of sentence. That's it. All of that other stuff, employee benefits, you know, group 360s with your boss of how can I do better, or maybe a one-off of what's wrong with work or the surveys you take, all of that wraps back into keeping the company from being sued. Once you know that, then you can approach your boss. Know that anything that you're upset with and you go around your boss goes immediately to your boss, So if you think you go to HR and say, my boss doesn't listen to me, he doesn't value me as a person, they don't care. They don't care. They're going to go right to your boss and say, hey, you don't value Wheeler as a person. He goes, yep, I don't. He sucks. And they're going to go, okay, let's look at how Wheeler sucks and document that for his next review. That's what's going to happen. So how do you get along with your boss? I hate to say it. You kiss up. I'm just going to put it out there. You kiss up. I'm not saying be shameless about it, but I'm also saying, you know, when he's wrong, don't call him out on it. I'll tell you, I'm an example of what not to do. I remember I was in Bosnia. Here's one, right? Bosnia, had a commander, West Pointer. Good guy, really is. I was young and cocky. Going back and think of it, he's probably young, not as cocky. We go through a thing called the zone of separation. It's the minefield. It's about a mile long, and it was a huge border. I don't remember how long it went, 300 miles, something ridiculous. You had to cross through it almost every day. And back then, we didn't have, I don't know, little smartphones with GPS. We had a compass, we had a laminated map, and then I had a big GPS thing that was probably about as big as this, and it would say plus or minus 200 meters. Now, for those of you who have never been in a minefield, plus or minus 200 meters is quite a lot, right? Not necessarily on point, not something I want to rely on. So anyway, go back to the story. My boss, the commander, wanted to go on a patrol with me, and he wanted to be a supercharger, West Pointer, Airborne Ranger, all of that, and he wanted to be large and in charge. I'm like, okay, sir, you take charge, go for it. But he wanted me to tell him where to go from the rear. So I'm in the back Humvee. We're four Humvee convoy. He's in the front. We're driving along. We're coming up to the zone of separation. Again, the big minefield. Now, we're currently on a hardtop, which means a paved road, which means you can probably count on there's no mines underneath a paved road, right? You all can follow along with that. You can't dig a hole in concrete. So everybody's pretty safe on a paved road. Well, I had gone into the engineering tent earlier just to kind of mess with him a little bit, and I found a new path that the engineers had cleared through the zone of separation, which happened to be a dirt trail about the size of a tractor with the two little ruts for the wheels. So we're going along. I call up to my commander and say, hey, turn right here. He breaks on the mic and says, are you sure right here? Yes, I'm sure. Turn in. So he turns in. And now he's getting nervous because we're seeing stuff blown up all over the place. Blown up vehicles, a blown up cow. Nothing's alive in this place. It's a minefield, right? Now he's getting nervous. And he's calling back to me every 2 minutes, turned into every minute, every 30 seconds. Where are we? What's our grid? What's our coordinate? And I would do things to edge him on, like, well, sir, I'm pretty sure we're here. I think we're there. You know, things that wouldn't really instill confidence that I knew where we were at any point in time. And again, when you're in a minefield, you don't probably want to hear that. So that was my way of joking with my boss. Guess what? Didn't work out so well. He came up. He said, halt the convoy. Get up here. I get up to the front Humvee. He slams the map down the desk. Show me where we are on this map right now. And so now I know the joke's over. I point, hey, sir, we're right here. And I had the Pfister with me, and that means the fire control officer. He also confirmed where we were. My boss is very emotional at this point. I think his dad died in Vietnam, and he had a newborn on the way. And the evil Wheeler, this is the old Wheeler, kind of played into those emotions, and that's why I had him in the minefield. Again, not a great thing, not a great joke to play on your boss, but I said, hey, sir, we're right here. Well, now he's all revved up. He still doesn't believe it, and he looks at me and goes, when we get back to the command center, and I go into the command tent, and if I see this route is not clear, I'm going to Article 15 you right out of the Army. Now, me being who I am, again, a little too quick with words, I sat there, smiled. After I thought about it, I said, well, sir, if we make it back to the top, that means that the route was clear, and I'm good to go. Otherwise, you get blown up. Either way, I'm good to go. So, of course, that didn't help the situation, right? So now he's really mad. So, anyway, it just was bad vibes the rest of the tour between me and my quote-unquote boss. So why am I telling you that story? Yeah, you can be funny with your boss. You could try, and when they say, hey, I'm down on your level, just talk to me real. Don't do it. Don't do it. Just do yourself a favor. Kiss up. Look for another job somewhere else. Move forward and do great things. So I hope that helps. All right, so here we go. Let's look at topic one, right? Careers. We're going to talk about careers. So I'm not going to lie. What's the best career out there? I'm not going to lie. Some careers are definitely better than others. Well, wait a minute, Wheeler. What about doing what I love to do? I want to do my passion. I'll tell you, when I was in the PhD program, I heard this a lot, right? When I was working at a job at General Electric. They were paying for the PhD program, which, by the way, for those of you who are thinking about getting a graduate career, I suggest you get a job first. Most companies will give you tuition reimbursement for your MBA, some type of master's program, or maybe even your PhD. So don't try and go in alone. Try and get into that career you like first. And then if you like it and you're good at it, typically that company will help you pay for tuition to further your education. But anyway, I'm in a PhD program. And for those of you who haven't been in a PhD program, it's just about getting through the PhD program, right? You do a dissertation, you do your research, you do the dissertation, and you try and get three other professors who are old and curmudgeon probably to try and agree that you did good work, and then you get the hell out of Dodge. That's the goal. Now, for those who are in the know to get through the PhD program, you do what I just said about kissing up to your boss. You play to that committee. You kind of do the research they want and they like, and you get through the program, and then you can go do what you like to do, because then you're a doctorate. Because before you get your PhD, no one cares what you have to say, right? But I ran into a lot of peers that wanted to do their passion. I want to do my study of the group social dynamics of I don't know, whatever indigenous tribe in Brazil is going on against the other indigenous tribe of Turkey and see what happens. Yeah, well, no one cares, right? Let alone your committee. And so what happens is they get bogged down and they don't finish their dissertation, right? So do what you're told and you'll move on. And then once you're the boss, then you can make the things the way you want to do. But anyway, going back to it, yeah, I know what it is to do what you love, but first you got to probably do what you don't love. Tell you, I had this story. I had a mentor at General Electric. Nice guy. He graduated from SMU. His wife graduated from Ole Miss. Both their parents were millionaires. They had money. His two kids, he put through private school here in Dallas. It was the Ursuline and Jesuit, right? A boy and a girl. For those of you who don't know, those are very expensive private schools. Back then, I think it was, I don't know, 10, 15 grand, maybe 20 grand a year to put him through just the high school. He paid for that. Then he paid for them both to go to SMU. And for those of you who don't know SMU, it's about $250,000 to go to SMU. So now he put both his kids, he spent about probably $600,000 on his two kids' education. And what did they come out and do? Well, the daughter wound up being an art teacher, or some would argue got her MRS degree, right? I'm not sure if that's a Me Too moment thing or not. But anyway, what that means is she was really looking for a husband. She got an art degree. I'm not sure how that worked out. Bottom line is, I don't think she needed to pay $250,000 to get an art degree from SMU to be an art teacher. And then his son wound up being an entry-level tech at some engineering firm, and I don't think he ever made to be an engineer. So what's my point of that story is, well, you'd have been better off talking to your kids about what they really kind of want to do versus just throwing them into the best and most expensive educational institution in the state of Texas just to see what happens, right? So I would encourage you, right, to look at what maybe you like doing. What is it something you like doing? And then will someone pay you for it? Here's another thing that might come back into fashion. And I think especially for the millennials and younger, right? They kind of see the boomers and the Generation Xers like myself coming out with a lot of school debt. And in that example, hey, I'm gonna get $250,000 in school loans. I'm gonna be in debt $200,000, and I'm gonna come out making $30,000 a year. I don't need a financial calculator to tell you how many years of debt you're gonna be in before you actually start experiencing some of the money that you hope you'll get a job in and the degree you got, right? So what's making a comeback right now? Two things are making a comeback. One, community college, right? If you haven't looked at community college, you should. They are getting much more robust. They're hiring much better professors. And there's reasons for that. They're incented to hire those. Professors are getting paid more, so they're going there. And every institution in Dallas, every university, has to take those credits from the community college. There's no more, hey, we're not taking that credit. So it's a good, great, cheap way to find yourself, quote unquote, find yourself. You know, I'm going to go to college and find myself. Well, you know what? Go find yourself at community college for about $8,000 in 2 years instead of $80,000. Okay, I would strongly encourage you to do that. Unless you're bourgeois and you have rich parents, or you're rich yourself and can afford, you know, to spend $200,000 to find yourself, right? Go to community college, find yourself cheaper. You know what? Have your friends help find you too. They'll probably give you a GPS, go, hey, you're right here at Collin County. Get to it. You know what I'm saying? So don't overvalue the whole find yourself thing. So that's the one thing. Community college make a comeback. The bigger thing that I'm more excited about is what we used to call back in the 80s, Votech. And I know a lot of you right now are like, what is that? So Votech. Wake up. Votech. VOTEC, Vocational Technical College, Diesel Driving Academy, baby. That's the stuff I'm talking about. Plumber, electrician, radiologist, dental hygienist, on and on and on. These jobs don't require a $250,000 education over the course of 4 years. Not only that, but they can pay up to six figures as well. Those are coming back into fashion. Now, why did they fall out of fashion? Why a lot of you don't even know what the heck I'm talking about? Well, back in the 90s, and I'm not getting political. This is not political. I'm not for or against. It's just a matter of fact. The Bill Clinton administration came back and trying to re-educate the public workforce. We had a lot of coal miners, a lot of these blue-collar jobs, a lot of stuff with NAFTA was going overseas to Mexico, Canada, China. A lot of these blue-collar line worker jobs were leaving. And so what Bill Clinton said was, well, we just need to re-educate everybody, and you all need to get white-collar jobs, and we're going to make the institutions help you for that. And so all of those vocational jobs fell out of favor. High schools quit doing it. They lost funding. So they're not providing VOTEC again, and they haven't for a while. But now you're starting to see that come back. Because why? Because we need plumbers, electricians. Not everybody can be a doctor and a lawyer. Or if they are, what do we got? Nothing but a bunch of doctors and lawyers. I mean, I think Judge Smells in Caddyshack said it best. The world needs ditch diggers too, right? Ditch diggers make a lot of money. I make fun of that, but ditch diggers can make $100,000, $150,000, right, with your right company, if you own the company. If you do those service-type jobs, you will make that money. So I encourage you to go back and not pull out a top 10 list of the top, you know, paying. I have that here. What are the top paying jobs? I'll go through that. I wouldn't do this, but here. You're going to get stuff like physician, $208,000. Orthodontist, $208,000. Physicians, 208 more. 750. I know a neurologist at Parkland makes $750,000 a year. So, yeah, anesthesiologist, you know, $500,000, $800,000. Obstetrician. So, you learn about doctors and surgeons. Pilots can make $100,000, $200,000 a year. I wouldn't do that, right? I mean, very few people are going to say, I want to be a doctor or a lawyer. That's what those lists are going to get you. Now, I pull up VOTEC jobs. Look at the same thing. Construction manager, $97,000 a year. Elevator and escalator installer and repair. You know those things that go up and down, right, that are broke all the time, right? People tend to want those repaired. That's paying, what's that paying? That's paying like $80,000 to $100,000 if you own the, yeah, there it is, $88,000 to fix an elevator. Radiation therapist. Let's say, oh, well, I want something with a little bit more prestige. Okay, so let's say you're working and you're helping people with cancer, but you don't want to be a doctor. You don't have time to go to college or the money, not only college, but after college. Radiation therapist, right? $86,000. Pretty good to me, right? Nuclear medicine technologist, $80,000. Dental hygienist, $80,000. I know one dental hygienist makes $120,000 here in Dallas, right? Electrical engineering technician, not electrical engineer, but a technician. Here's the funny thing. Electrical engineering tech makes $70,000. A starting electrical engineer at a small firm may make $45,000, $50,000, right? Yeah, some guys are out there making $90,000 coming right out, but they typically have the pedigree degree from the great college. But if you're just coming out of, you know, a lower school, you're not making that. So what's my point? My point is to take, oh, here's one. Aircraft, avionics, equipment, mechanic, technicians, $66,000. I know one guy went in the Army as a mechanic, and, you know, as an E5, as a sergeant, you're making probably, I don't know, $20,000, $25,000. I don't know, you can look it up. It ain't a lot. You're not bragging about it. Now, after 4 years, he got out, works at Lockheed Martin. What's he making at Lockheed Martin? $160,000. Not bad, right? No college degree. You don't have to be in college to be a sergeant in the Army. Officers in the Army. I came out, I was making, I think, $23,000 in the 90s as an officer in the Army. 4 years, you got to go to college. 4 years of college, $23,000. I got out. I got a job with General Electric, I think, making $70,000, right? That's with college. That's also with an MBA. And that's in year 2000. Making about $70,000, $75,000, okay? Now, take that same scenario. Say if I was a sergeant, went in as a mechanic, which I could have done, got out after 4 years and went to work and got a $160,000 job. Which one would you want to do? Okay. Man, I wish I could go back and talk to myself. So that's what I'm telling you. Expand your horizons and don't just poo-poo any job that doesn't require college. Now, let's jump into why is that? Why do we tend to poo-poo those jobs where you don't have to go to college? Well, again, I go back to socialization. Again, I it's no secret I have a degree in sociology, socioeconomics. It's kind of how I look at things. And you look at theory here, you come up with what happened, again, starting in the 90s. Hey, you need to go to college to get the kind of job you want to be able to grow and move ahead for your family. Before that, in the 50s, they had the New Deal, and they said, hey, we're going to have a house and 2-car garage for every family. Why? We were the only superpower left after World War II. And of course, we had all the money and a lot of blue-collar jobs, production jobs, and it was a reality for a lot of people. And that's where you see the Leave It to Beaver shows and all of that. Everybody's happy in the 50s, making money. Of course, obviously, there were still problems in terms of equality of things of that nature. But fiscally, the country was going well. And you didn't really need a job. You didn't really need college to get those jobs. And that's where Votech and those kept pushing. And it kept doing until, again, the 90s when we had the downturn in the 80s to the 90s and had to turn back up. So society has kind of pushed us to say, hey, not going to college is bad. You know, it used to be a big deal to graduate high school. You didn't have to do it. And there's a lot of people in the 50s and 60s that just didn't finish high school, went on to have careers as a plumber and electrician, and made good money, didn't even graduate high school. And then society just kind of poo-pooed that, took those opportunities away. If you really want to get into it, there's three theories with sociology. There's the conflict theory, the functionalist theory, symbolic interactionism. Now I'm putting everybody to sleep. What does that have to do with anything about building wealth? Well, when you look at it, conflict theory means, hey, society works off a conflict. We grow. Maybe you hear that if you go to marital counseling or any type of relationship counseling. When two people disagree, that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's probably a good thing. That way we resolve that conflict and we grow together. So that's conflict theory. Functionalist, right? So conflict theory is kind of where capitalism comes from. We live in a capitalistic society. That means there's the haves and the have-nots. That's just the nature of the beast today. I'm not saying that's the right thing. I'm saying that's what we have today. That's the hand you have been dealt. You can fight against that hand. You can try and change the world if you want, and maybe eventually you will succeed. Meantime, you're going to be broke. You're going to be broke, but you'll be happy changing the world. So once you realize you live in a capitalist society, that'll help you formulate, well, what kind of career do I need to go get? Okay. Functionalist society, functionalism means we all have a part to play. And ditch digger should be paid just as much as a doctor, should be just paid as much as an airline pilot. We all get paid the same. I'm not saying that's wrong. That's leans more toward communism. And communism kind of gets a bad rap. And I'm not saying we need to be communistic either, but that's kind of what functionalism speaks to. But that's not the reality we're in. We live in a have and have not world. For me to get mine, you can't get yours. That's the world we live in now. And then we got symbolic interactionism. So that's where things like TV commercials, billboards, this is why we have social influencers. You see somebody with wearing a certain product, or this is cool or that's cool, the Kim Kardashians of the world. That's where that comes in. So why did I go through that? Society is pushing these things on you that are out of your control. And that's why college has been pumped up and jobs that require no college have been pumped down. But what I'm encouraged to see is that the younger generation has seen through that, right? Fought through that, to your guys' credit. And you now realize that you don't need to go to college to make a living. You can be things like your own entrepreneur. You can start things like being a plumber and make $200,000 a year, be an electrician, social media, whatever it is that you do. You don't necessarily need to go pay 4 years of college to get it. I think college will continue to increase in price as it is a business. And I think people are going to really start relooking that and say, listen, it's not worth, again, I don't want to come out of college $250,000 in debt and having a $40,000 art teacher job. There's no ROI in that. And that's not the world we live in. You know, I had a plumber, right, come put it in my tub. And it was, I live in an old condo, and it's like a fiberglass tub, had a crack in it, and he had to replace it. And was going through, I said, man, you know, I'm not gonna lie, he smelled a little bit. He said, hey, sorry I smelled. I just came from another job or sewage backup. So sorry about that. I'm like, hey, no problem. But man, that's tough, huh? That, you know, a lot of your job is kind of smells, right? I mean, you have to deal with those tough smells. He goes, that's okay, son. He's about 77 years old. That's okay, son. That's just the smell of money. So what am I saying? Just go out there and get a job that doesn't necessarily require college. Look at things that you like to do and pay money. Let's look at some of the absurdity of some of our career judgments, why we want to go to college. You don't have to look more than the college admission scandal. Like, how ridiculous is that? Rich people paying for their rich kids subversively to go to college that they don't even really want to go to, nor do they need to make money, right? So, I mean, that is the absurdity of how we push this college on ourselves. It's like we've got even the richest of us thinking that we've got to somehow finagle to get our ne'er-do-well kids into that college for some benefit that no one's ever going to see. And people went to jail for it, right? That's how absurd it is. So don't just have college on the brain. Another one is people are like, well, wait a minute, Wheeler, well, they're talking about free college. What if they make college free for everybody? Wouldn't that be good? So they don't have to worry about debt. Free college. Okay, I'll say it like this. High school's free now too for most people, right? So what happened? What differentiates me and 100 other people who graduated high school? Used to be college. Okay, now, one differentiator is not everybody can afford college. You got to make a life choice. And used to, those degrees typically pay more than non-college degrees. Well, that's a facade. We've gone over that. But let's just say it's not. Let's just say, college is the deal. Well, if we make it free, what is it? It's unified everybody. Now, there's no differentiator there. None at all. Now that college is free, what's going to be the next thing? It'll probably be grad school at that point. And it already kind of is. MBAs. I see another guy or girl. I mean, I'll tell you what, with an MBA. I remember I was at a dinner. This is almost 18 years ago. This girl, lady, however you want to say it, very smart, very professional, was sitting at the dinner table with a lot of other professionals professing how the MBA program worked. All the ins and outs of it, how she's studying it, going through it. Now, no one asked. And several of us at the table already had an MBA. But I let her keep going. She's telling me how great an MBA is and what it matters and on and on and on. Finally, a friend of mine sitting next to me says, hey, Wheeler, don't you have like 2 MBAs? Look on her face. She's like, oh, did you have an MBA? I'm going to make a big deal. I have an MBA and I have another master's in HR. But it's great that you're doing that. But my point is this. By that time, and this is 18 years ago, the MBA was already watered down. I had a boss at GE said, look, there's 2 types of people at GE. Those with an MBA and those without. That's it. So if you want to get promoted, get an MBA. If you don't. That's why I got the MBA, right? General Electric paid for it. I didn't go pay for it myself. They paid for it. So my point to free college is it's only worth what you pay. And if it's free, it probably won't be worth a whole lot. So there's a lot more to it. I'm not trying to, discourage you from going to college, but I am discouraging those who are banking on it being free. One, going to happen, and two, it's going to mean something for you. You'd be far better off taking a look internally about what do you like doing. And so let's talk about that a little bit. What do we do? Okay, well, Wheeler, you beat me down now. You say college sucks, and, I'm going to pay a lot and not get the degree I want. So what do I do then? All right, well, let me help you with that. So as you heard from my daughters, Elin and Remy, right? One of them wants to be a veterinarian. And I'm kind of encouraged because Elin keeps saying vet, right? So she keeps saying that. Now, I'm not going out buying getting college applications for a 7-year-old for veterinarian school, nor am I banking on that's going to happen. And then I got Remy, who 1 minute wants to be an astronaut, next minute a police person, and 1 minute what she calls a maker or what would be an engineer. So normal for kids. But what I would encourage you to do is go back to that in your own mind. Go back if you can remember back that far, think about, and even if you're older, even if you're 45, 55, 60, what was it that inspired you when you were 6 or 7 years old? Now, why do I say 6 or 7? Because the realities of life for most of us haven't hurt us yet, haven't hit us in the gut. We still firmly believe at 6 or 7 that we could do anything that we came up with our brains. And again, this is where American society works in our favor. There's a lot of shows out there, a lot of reinforcement that you can be whatever you want to be if you set your mind to it. So go back to when you were 7 and think about what that was. Now you're thinking, okay, Wheeler, that was ridiculous. I wanted to be an astronaut when I was 7, and I'm 55. I'm not going to go back and do all the stuff that requires to be an astronaut. I'm not smart enough for that. Okay, great. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, what about an astronaut made you want to be an astronaut? I don't know what that was. Was it the rocket ship itself? Was it exploring space? Was it looking at space? So let's say it was, you know, space. Well, what if you went to work for a telescope company as a technician, right? What if you went to work in a welding degree that welds on rockets, right? Find something in there, that little kernel of something that sparked you to get up every morning and do it. Find that and then build on that. Do a derivative of that, you know, change it a little bit. If you can do it pure, great. If you can go be an astronaut and you can still make that happen, great. Chances are you won't, right? Same with NBA, right? All the time. So these kids that want to be an NBA player, well, only the top 1% of basketball players get to be an NBA. I mean, what is it, only like 32 teams times 10? I mean, it doesn't take long to do the math. NFL, professional sports, I see it all the time, parents paying tens of thousands of dollars for the high schoolers to try in the hopes that they'd be in an NFL, because there's always one bell ringer that did it. You know what? You'd be better off doing something sports related. I don't know. Is that sports broadcasting? Is it working on sports equipment? Is it sports equipment manufacturing? Something of that nature. But my point is, go back to when you were 6 or 7. Find what got you up or excited. Think about it, and then try and gear towards that. If you're in a job that you currently can't stand. But what you don't want to do is just take a job for money. And you know, you've heard this cliche, hey, making money isn't going to make you happy. Yeah, it does. I mean, making money makes you happy, but if you're doing something you don't like to do and you're forced to do it a lot, it's horrible. I'll tell you, when I went to work for Samsung, they pay me twice as much as what GE paid me, a lot more responsibility. But we worked almost 24/7, and it was needless work. It was busy work. There was cultural imbalances. I wrote a whole dissertation on it. If you're so inclined, you can go Google it. But it just didn't work out. I was the most miserable in my life when I worked at Samsung, but I made some of the most money in my life during that time. But I was the most miserable. So don't let money be the deciding factor. It certainly needs to be somewhere in there. But I would say if you want to put a percentage to it, I would say only make it be about 25% of why you're doing something. But if you're just going at something for money, I mean, at that point, and I hate to use the word, but you're just a prostitute at that point. If you're just doing something for money, that's the definition of prostituting yourself. I wouldn't do that. You won't be able to last doing that. You think you will, especially if you're younger. You think, oh, I don't care what they pay me. They pay me 500 grand a year, I'll do X. It won't last. It won't last. You'll be miserable. You'll lose a couple years of your life, probably some friends, and some of your family won't like you. You'd be better off doing something you like for 50 grand versus something you don't like for $500,000. I mean, been there, done that. So I'll tell you, why did I join the Army? Listen, I had no idea, right? I had no idea what I wanted to do coming out of Mississippi. Options were limited. We didn't have the greatest guidance counselor. My family had a history in the military. Both my grandfathers, one was World War I. Others in World War II. It just seemed that I had an uncle who was a colonel in the Army. Seemed to be the thing to do. And here's the rub. When I went through the school, right, ROTC, and graduated, I had to pick what I wanted to do in the Army. I hadn't given any thought. I had no idea what I wanted to do in the Army, right? For some reason, I put infantry down. I'll tell you, infantry's hard. If I could go back again, I would have put quartermaster. Right? And so people are like, why'd you get out of the Army? Because the infantry is hard. And yeah, it's great. And there's fun things. You blow stuff up. You shoot at things. You run around, play soldier. But at the end of the day, it is a lot of work. You're deployed a lot. You're tired. You don't make a lot of money. And for every 2 months of fun, or I'm sorry, 2 months of work, or what do you say? For every 30 seconds of fun, there's about 2 months of work involved. So I didn't give it enough thought to think about what did I want to do in the Army, right? So I'm telling you that story. So give some thought about what you want to do. There's a great book out there. You say, I know we don't do books anymore, but it's called What Color Is Your Parachute? I think it's still out there, and you could probably get it on Amazon Prime. Or you know what? Better way, there's a little thing called the library. Instead of you spending that money, go to the library, and they'll order it for you. May have to wait a day or two, and then you can just get it, and it's free. I know for you kids don't know about the library, you get these books for free, read them and turn them back in, right? It's a great, wonderful thing, the library. I would encourage you to read that book and I'll help figure out what it is you like. But to kind of put it succinctly, I would say, hey, look, think about what it is you like to do. Again, go back to your 6, 7-year-old self. What is it that you like to do? And then the main question is, do you think anybody will pay you to do that? I mean, if you like to sit around in diapers all day eating Krispy Kremes, great. Is anybody going to pay you to do that? Now, if you want to turn that into a social influencer thing, maybe they can, maybe you get paid to do that now. I don't know. But two key things. What do you like to do? And will someone pay you to do that? If they will not pay you to do that, is there a derivative of that? Is there something close to that or that touches on that that someone pays for? Okay, start with that. Then when you answer those two questions, ask yourself, is it scalable? Is it sustainable? What do I mean by that? Scalable. Can I grow not only financially in this career, but as a person? Will I learn more? A lot of people forget that in terms of careers. If you just look at it monetarily only, you're going to feel empty after a while. I've seen it with people who make less than 50 grand. I've seen it with people who make 800 grand, 2 million a year. If they're not growing mentally, emotionally as a person, the amount of money doesn't make them happy. They get depressed. Right. And then when you get depressed, you don't work as hard and then the money starts to go away. So is it scalable in that regard? Not only monetarily wise, but can you grow mentally with it as well? And sustainable. Can you keep doing that type work? So I don't know. Take Evel Knievel, for example. If you want to be a daredevil, great. But can you do that when you're 60 years old? Probably not. But you could probably do a derivative of it. Right. So if you want to be a daredevil for about 5 or 10 years, or take Johnny Knoxville talks about this in an interview with Howard Stern. He can't keep doing Jackass at 50. It has literally beat his body down. He wants to mentally keep doing it, and he fell into depression because he can't keep doing it. And so now he's seeking a derivative of that. He's producing more of the movies, doing other offshoots of that. So again, sustainable and scalable. Think about those things. And then can you make other people's lives better? Right. I hate to put that last, but you kind of, I'm not saying it's the least thing, but if you can't do the other things first, then that doesn't matter. That, as cheesy as it sounds, is what's going to make you complete in your career. If you don't feel like you're ultimately helping people, I do not care how much money you are making. Some people will say, oh, well, if I make $500,000 as a stockbroker, then I'll take that $500,000 and go help the kids in Uganda or whatever it is. Yeah, maybe. I highly doubt it, and it probably won't last. So you're better off with a career that can dovetail in with helping people too. It doesn't have to be something highfalutin like, hey, I'm helping feed the villages of Lower Mississippi or whatever you want to say. It can be something like helping kids in school read better because you work for Harper and Row and they produce books. I mean, you can think about that. Think about the vision, mission statements of your companies. That's why those companies have them, right? If you don't have a higher purpose, you will not enjoy working where you're working. Okay. So sometimes you can't find exactly what you love to do or no one's going to pay you to do it. Again, I tell you, find something in a job that you can do that will help you make that difference. There's a movie out there. I don't know if you saw it, Mr. Holland's Opus. Again, it's an old movie. That's how old I am. The guy, Richard Dreyfuss. I'm not a big Richard Dreyfuss fan. I don't like the movie, but it speaks to what I'm saying. He wanted to be a band entrepreneur. What do you call it? An opera leader or a conductor. And he's going to write this great masterpiece, conducting piece, and that's what he wanted to do. Well, guess what? No one hired him to do that. So he wound up being a high school band leader. And then for 20 years, that's what he did. He wound up retiring, and that's the movie. Spoiler alert. He wound up being happy, cheesy, cry moment because he affected all of these kids' lives. From what he originally wanted to do as a conductor, great, prestigious job, to what he actually wound up doing is helping a bunch of high school kids live out their dreams. So I would encourage you, if you don't know what you want to do, go get you a beverage of your choice. Watch Mr. Holland's Opus. Get the book, What Color's My Parachute? Go through those steps I told you. And you should be good to go. Now, the last thing I'll leave you here with is that just remember that, you know, all the things I told you is great, but whatever you make, the key to this thing is whatever you make while you're working, 50 grand, 100 grand, 200 grand, that's what you're living off while you're working. That's typically what you're going to be living off when you're retirement. All right. And why do I say that? Because a lot of people come in and say, well, I made 50 grand a year for the last 20 years, but I want to spend 200 grand a year in retirement. Wake up, not happening, okay? You can't do that. Now, I'm not saying forego your life stream of 50 grand a year job just so you can make 200 grand in retirement, but I'm saying in terms of you guys, because we always talk about building wealth, in terms of building your wealth, just realize what you do throughout your life, that's kind of where your limitations are going to be in retirement. Don't think you can earn 50 grand a year for 20, 30 years, find some super duper investment when you turn 70 and turn it into a $200,000 income stream. It's just not going to happen. Thanks for listening. Tune in next time. We're going to talk about how to get grandpa and grandpa's money tax-free. It's going to be a great day.